Advertising your business with GCN is simple, effective,
and more affordable than you might think.
Visit advertise.gcnlive.com for more info. Take your business to the next level.
From an undisclosed broadcasting location.
This is a test. For the next 60 seconds, this station will conduct a test of the emergency broadcast system.
America, here comes the relief from the pain. Unapologetically. This is Lock and Load with Bill Frady.
Hour number three. On the InvestUSA.org microphone, this is Lock and Load. And joining me now for this final hour with Genesis Communications Network is writer Dean Weingarten. Good afternoon, sir.
Good afternoon, Bill. I am glad to be here.
Yes, sir. Now, because this is the final hour with Genesis, we're going to talk about something that hasn't been published yet. So you get to hear about it first here. So, and we're talking bears because that's, you know, that's my thing. I like to talk about the bears. So, Dean, if you would.
Yes. And what this is, it's the latest update in our ongoing research about how effective handguns are used when you in defense against bears. And when I say used, I mean when a shot or more than one shot is fired in defense against bears. Because if no shot is fired, it's hard to fault the handgun or the means of defense.
Right.
In the famous study about the effectiveness of bear spray in deterring bears in Alaska, by Tom Smith and Stephen Herrera, they very carefully only included cases where bear spray was sprayed. And it makes sense because the problems with getting at a defensive means, accessing that defensive weapon system, and activating it or using it are very similar.
Right.
For handguns and for bear spray, even knives and rifles and shotguns to an extent too. And if you leave your rifle sitting against the tent 20 feet away, or you have your bear spray in a pack, or your handgun is carried in your backpack, or it isn't loaded, or you carry the magazine separately with an empty chamber, you have problems in accessing those defensive systems quickly and using them accurately and effectively. So I believed, and several of my colleagues also, that if we were going to look at defensive uses of handguns, one way to prevent selection bias from creeping in was to include all cases where a handgun was fired in defense against a bear.
Right.
And to exclude cases where a handgun was not fired in defense against a bear. And this puts the starting gate at about the same for both bear spray and handguns and other weapons. because if you have the weapon in your hand, you're at a tremendous advantage than if you don't. And very often, if that weapon is a good ways away, the time that you have to take to retrieve it and use it is critical. Now, I will say that this criteria of only counting cases in which either firearms are fired or bear spray is sprayed probably works a little bit to the advantage of bear spray. And the reason is that bear spray is a relatively recent phenomenon. It didn't start getting really used much until the 80s. The safeties are crude. The holsters are crude. It's subject to other criteria than handguns are.
Right.
And so, on the other hand, handguns have gone through a 150-year evolutionary process along with their holsters, in which time people have perfected holsters and handguns to the point that they have been designed over 15 decades of experimentation and cut and try to be quickly and readily available while carried safely in a holster and to be used extremely rapidly in presentation to put bullets on target. That's not the case with bear spray. It just hasn't been around long enough. And the motivations for bear spray to improve are much different than for handguns to improve. Handguns are used every day in defensive situations. They're used hundreds of thousands, been used hundreds of thousands, maybe millions of times in combat between humans. So there's a tremendous pressure and incentive to make the ergonomics of handguns better and better and better.
Right.
And they are perfected in this cauldron of intense life and death situations. But we cut out all that by saying we only are going to use them when they are fired. We're only going to collect those incidents. And, you know, actually, when I look at bear spray, I tend to only look at the cases where it's actually sprayed. So, and that's what Stephen Herrero and Tom Smith did in their study that was published about 20 years ago. So what we have done, too, in order, as I mentioned, selection bias. To prevent selection bias, we include every single incident which we can document where a handgun was fired in defense against the bear. We do not say, well, we don't think this one looks very good, we're not going to include it. Or this one doesn't meet some subjective criteria, so we're not going to include it. And that has led us to include some incidents that, frankly, look kind of iffy. But we are sticking to our original criteria, and we're not going to bend them because sometimes the criteria seems a little silly. Instead, what we do is we record what happened. In every instance, we're at least able to give a thumbnail sketch of what happened in every single instance. So the reader is allowed to judge. If they think an incident doesn't sound reasonable, they can read the description of what happened. And they say, oh, that really, we shouldn't count that as a save. Or they can say, we shouldn't count that as a failure. The reader has the option because they have access to all the data that we used in our criteria. So it's not just our judgment. The reader gets to choose. And so we have included, as part of our study, all the information on the incidents that we gathered. And it's public. Almost every incident we have has either a link or it has a source. Many of them came from books. We explain which book, what page. If we do an interview, we publish most of the interview, or the part of the interview that describes the incident. And so it's exactly the opposite approach of Smith and Herrero in their study, because they won't let us see their data. They say there's so many incidents, we just have to take their word for it. They give us an overall idea of what the incidents were about,
right?
But they leave out critical detail. Now, some of the stuff.
Hang on there, if you would. Coming up on the first break. And this article is not at Ammoland, although I suspect it will be at some later time. But today we're doing something special because this is it. And talking to Dean Weingarten from where he has 2,400 plus other articles at Ammoland.com. We'll be right back. This is Lock and Load. We'll be right back.
Monster.com, the home of DeSantis quality-built American-made products for 45-plus years. Supporting police and government contracts from first responders to responsible citizens. Holster.com is your source for quality American-made leather and kydex holsters for the armed American. For concealed carry or open carry, Holster.com has what you need.
We didn't invent concealment.
We perfected it. Go to Holster.com now and buy a DeSantis holster today.
At Spikes Tactical, we are all shooters with a very simple mission. Make the best product we can perfect at the best possible price for our consumers. We strive to produce the best components and rifles available, with quality controls second to none, because real-world events don't allow for a second chance. Whether you are an operator, competitor, or home defender, Spikes Tactical will serve you well. Go to SpikesTactical.com. Spikes Tactical, 100% American-made to the highest standard.
As Dr. Wallach says, we all have nutrient deficiencies in our diets and must supplement with 90 essential nutrients in proper balances. At no cost or obligation, get a personal certified holistic health coach to help you develop a supplement program based on Dr. Wallach's recommendations. Call Linda at 833-VITAL-90. That number to call is 833-848-2590. That's 833-VITAL-90.
Hi, this is Dr. Joel Wallach, the mineral doctor. You've heard me talk about 90 for life for years. 60 minerals, 16 vitamins, 12 amino acids, 2 fatty acids. You may not know this, that I've actually designed Arthrodex for animals. That's right. Your pets need 90 for life, too. Get this essential pet product by calling 877-279-9422. That's 877-279-9422. Again, 877-279-9422.
Hi, I'm Dan Pilla. I started fighting the IRS over 40 years ago when they tried to seize my mother's house. I sued the IRS and won. I beat the IRS then, and I've been beating them ever since. I wrote the book on tax debt settlement, and I've helped thousands of people deal with tax problems they thought might never be solved. I can help you too. If you owe taxes you can't pay, don't wait another day. There's no such thing as a hopeless tax case. Call 800-34-NO-TAX or go to my website, danpilla.com. That's danpilla.com, danpilla.com.
Life can be full of risks. One thing you shouldn't take a risk with ever is your family's health insurance. If you're self-employed or you now need affordable health insurance, you need to make this free call right now and see how the Health Insurance Helpline can help you get it. We specialize in helping the self-employed and people just like you that need affordable health insurance to get it. We have short and long-term health insurance plans, and some even cover dental, vision, and prescription drugs. Don't take a risk with your family's health insurance. It's not worth it. If you're self-employed or now need affordable health insurance, call right now and learn for free how to get it. Listen, affordable health insurance plans for everyone just like you are a free phone call away. So give us a shout right now.
800-670-0946. 800-670-0946. 800-670-0946. That's 800-670-0946.
One in three adults has prediabetes. One in three. That means it could be you, your football buddy. Your football buddy. Or you, your best man. Your worst man. You, your dog walker. Your cat jogger. While one in three adults has prediabetes, with early diagnosis, prediabetes can be reversed. Take the risk test at doihaveprediabetes.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and its prediabetes awareness partners.
And welcome back. On the InvestUSA.org microphone, this is Lock and Load, and joined again by Dean Weingarten, who's both fighting a... You're still fighting a cough, I take it?
Yeah, a little bit. I'm mostly able to suppress it. Sorry, let that get through.
Well, I got you covered. I had you covered on that one. So, if you would, I had to slow you down, slow the roll a minute. If you would, please pick it back up, and let's hear about it.
Okay, so what I was talking about is how we selected these incidents. And the criteria is very simple. Was a handgun fired in defense against a bear? Can we reasonably document that it was? Which usually means it's in a book or a news report, or sometimes a diary, or sometimes we are able to interview the people who are actively involved in the event. When we can do those things, we can get a time and a place and people involved. Very often we're able to get caliber and how many shots were fired, things like that. And that gives us reasonable belief that it's a real incident that really happened. And we take every one of those and include them in our database. And currently we have 190. So we are not selectively grabbing particular cases. We're taking all of them. And if you believe that you have more cases that we have left out, we want you to send them to us. The way this research started is we actively solicited cases where handguns had failed in self-defense against bears. And we were shocked. I was shocked that we just didn't find hardly any cases. I think in the first 37 instances that we found, there were 3 cases. Then the number went up to like 60 some incidents. Then it went up to 100 incidents. Then it went up to 130 incidents. Then it went up to 170 incidents. And now it's up to 190 incidents. They're all documented. We explain what happened and where it happened and when it happened. And we have 190 incidents where handguns were fired in defense against bears. Not all of these incidents are included in all the statistics. And the reason is very simple, because some of the time when a handgun is fired in defense against a bear, as you would expect, other people are shooting at the bear as well. So if both a handgun and long guns were fired against the bear,
right,
we do not include that in the handgun statistics because it's virtually impossible to figure out which gun did what at what time. And since we're trying to determine how effective handguns are, if you have somebody shoots a couple times with a .44 Magnum and two other hunters shoot 5 or 6 times with .338 Magnums and the bear goes down, well, what did what when? You know, so we include it so that people can look at it and make their own mind, because it is a case in which a handgun was used to defend against a bear, but we don't think it's reasonable to include it in the evaluation of how effective handguns are. Similarly, we have a case where a bear was hit by a car, and then somebody defended against it with a handgun. Well, how badly was it damaged by the car? Could it run, or could it only crawl? I mean, those are the types of questions that you can't really answer very well because there were several other factors involved. So when there is another potentially lethal force that was used in addition to the handgun, we do not include those in the statistics, and there, as I recall, about 25 instances out of 190 that are combination cases like that. And then we have cases where you just can't determine. At least I couldn't. I mean, I looked at what happened in the case. I read the description, what happened. And to me, I couldn't tell if the handgun had any effect at all. I mean, for example, in one case, a grizzly bear was coming toward some people who were worried about it. It's on a mountain trail. It was a couple hundred yards away. They fired a handgun, hoping to dissuade the bear. Well, when they next checked, the bear was gone. What, at a couple hundred yards, was it the handgun that dissuaded the bear, or did the bear just decide to go somewhere else? I don't think it's conclusive enough to say that the handgun saved, an effective use, a use you would be willing to attribute to the handgun as being effective against bears. There was another case where the bear mauled somebody and bear spray was used. And after the bear released the person that was being mauled, it was a few feet away, they were able to get a handgun and fire a few shots. But the bear was already moving away when they started shooting, and they'd already been sprayed. Can we really say that it was a handgun or the spray that happened? You know, that was most effective in that case. I couldn't figure it out. I can't say with certainty one way or another. So in these cases where it was very hard to determine what was the important or operative factor, we just say they're indeterminate. We can't tell. But there's only three of those cases. So we have a lot, well over 100, about 150 cases where it's very clear, it seems clear to me, what happened. And you're able to analyze those. Those are enough cases to do some analysis. And what we found is that handguns tend to be pretty effective.
Yeah.
They're effective in 98% of the time. That wasn't what we expected when we started looking at this. Remember, when we started the research, the question was, where are all the cases or incidents where handguns failed when fired in defense against a bear or bears? That's what we were looking for. But they turned out to be very elusive. We've only found four. And when you look at the four incidents, most people, I think, will examine them and say, those people were not very bright. They didn't act really well. Well, that's not the fault of a handgun or something like that. I'll give an example of the latest failure, which we found. Classified as failure because the handgun was fired and the bear didn't seem to be affected one way or another. The handgun was a .44 Magnum. The bear was a polar bear up north of the Arctic Circle. There were a number of explorers or...
Let me get you to hang on, if you would be so kind, because we're coming up on the next break, as it always happens. Dean has got 2,400-plus other articles at Amoland.com waiting on you right now, a most impressive archive. On the biggest website of its type on the planet. The biggest writer on the biggest website. We'll be right back. This is Lock and Load. At Chambers Custom, we have one job. We strive to build the most obsessively reliable, accurate, and beautiful pistols for the discriminating gun owner. Fusing the ageless 1911 design with a 21st century approach to each part and component, Chambers Custom meticulously begins each pistol as a standalone project, creating a bespoke, handcrafted, peerless firearm. They integrate all of the internal, external, and intrinsic elements that make a custom 1911 unique. Go to ChambersCustom.com. Chambers Custom, truly the mechanical advantage.
What's in a name? If that name is Ace Firearms, you've just entered a very expensive business. First, a fully appointed gun shop with all the guns, ammo, and accessories you could possibly imagine. But then you enter the manufacturing facility that is home to Red Alligator Concealment, Militia Arms Customs, and so much more. Ace Firearms is beyond a simple gun shop. This is a totally peerless operation. To find out more, go to acefirearms.com. Ace Firearms. This is only the beginning.
Update. More than 200 people rescued in Harris County, Texas as rivers flood. Residents being rescued on airboats from their homes. New developments out of the Middle East where a deal to release Israeli hostages from Hamas captivity is still being negotiated in Egypt. Meanwhile, the Israeli cabinet voting to remove the Al Jazeera TV network from operating in Israel. Back here in the U.S., pro-Palestinian protesters interrupt the University of Michigan graduation ceremony. The demonstrators teenagers removed on Saturday. President Biden speaking at the White House saying students have a right to protest but not to break the law. Biden scheduled to speak at the U.S. Holocaust Museum in Washington, D.C. as Yom HaShoah, Holocaust Remembrance Day, begins, a week of events planned to educate this generation as to the atrocities the Nazis committed against Jews. And I'm Laura Winters, USA News.
People often write to tell us what has happened for them since starting Extendivite. Allow me to read a few. After taking Extendivite for about 6 months, I've noticed improvement on the numbness of my hands and wrists from the carpal tunnel syndrome. I will continue to buy product. This formula is very powerful. I am feeling much better. My heart rate and blood pressure is stabilized. My lower edema has reduced, and lower leg pain due to blood clots has disappeared. This product has relieved what appears to be an angina problem, pain in the chest after climbing stairs and short on breath. I'm quite happy about it. To order, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit extendivite.com. That's extendivite.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
Wellness and self-care doesn't have to be complicated. So keep it simple and take good care of yourself with Sunny Bay heating pads. Our heating pads soothe pains in the neck, back, and shoulders while relaxing muscles and increasing blood circulation. Sunny Bay heating pads have always been made in the USA and hand-filled to perfection with the highest quality materials. Sunny Bay heating pads are the perfect wellness gift for loved ones or yourself. See all of our high-quality products at sunny-bay.com, including heated body pads, neck pillows, heated neck and body wraps, and our stress-reducing lavender line. They're all affordable, durable, and in stock now and ready for immediate shipping direct from sunny-bay.com. Read our trusted, authentic, and real reviews at sunny-bay.com or just search for Sunny Bay Heating Pad. To your good health and wellness from Sunny Bay.
Wow. Excuse me. Welcome back. On the InvestUSA.org microphone, this is Lock and Load, talking to Dean Weingarten, talking about handguns and bears.
So I was talking about the latest failure of a handgun.
Right.
Stop the aggressive actions of a bear, even though the handgun was fired. And this was 44 Magnum. It was a polar bear up north of the Arctic Circle. Let's see. I think it was 1995, I'm going by memory here, might be off a year or two, and the bear was aggressively hassling a number of explorers. They might have been doing geological searches, I don't remember precisely, and they had, someone had a 44 caliber handgun, it was almost certainly a 44 Magnum at that time, and somebody also had bear spray. Well, because the bear was so aggressive and nasty, a lot of people had to climb, like, radio towers and things like that to get away from the bear.
Right.
And someone fired a 44 Magnum, and it wasn't entirely clear, but it appeared it was fired as warning shots. In other words, as a noisemaker to try to stop the bear from being aggressive. But the bear didn't pay any attention to it. The same bear was hit with bear spray, and eventually, it's not clear how long it took, the bear left. But it didn't leave immediately after being shot at, or no, it wasn't shot at, after the warning shot. Now, look at our criteria. So what is the failure? Did the bear stop its aggressive behavior? No, it didn't. Were shots fired? Yes, they were. Were they fired from a handgun? Yes, they were. That is a failure by our criteria. But I think any fair-minded person would look at that and say, well, they never even tried to shoot the bear. And warning shots seem to be pretty effective most of the time. It's hard to be sure exactly how much, but in Svalbard Island, they don't allow bear spray, and they insist that everybody who leaves the area of the town, little town or village, when they go outside of it, they carry a powerful firearm, a powerful enough firearm, as protection against bears. And they claim, well, the College of Norway that was has a website about it, claims that most of the time, warning shots are effective in stopping curious bears or even aggressive bears. So it didn't work in this case, and so we count it as a failure. But I don't think most people are going to worry about it as, well, I shouldn't carry a 44 Magnum because it didn't work. So we allow readers to make their own decision about cases like that. We provide them with the information that we have. We give sources most of the time on most of the cases. They'll be able to go to the source and read more. Sometimes the links go bad. Sometimes they're in books that are not easy to get at. Sometimes they are interviews with the people that were involved. So when it's an interview with a person involved, not everybody is going to be able to get access to that person. Many times we'll publish a longer interview on AMLand, and people can go there and read about it. So we try to make the information as widely available to the public as we can. Now, those who use the papers by Tom Smith and Stephen Herrero, unfortunately, the data there is not open to the public. It's not available. You can read it, and you read the charts, and you can puzzle out some of the numbers, but they're not clear as to what happened when and where. So you can't look at a particular episode and you say, well, Weingarten and his group said this was a success. What does Tom Smith and his group claim? Do they say it's a failure? Do they say it's a success? Who do I agree with? You can't do it because they don't give you the information about the particular incidents. And you find some troubling things when you look at this. For example, in the original study about bear spray, efficacy of spray as a deterrent against bears in Alaska, I think is the title. They say there's 71 cases where bears were sprayed that they score. But when you look at the number of bears, which they label very clearly as total, there's only 46 bears. So how do you get 71 cases out of 46 bears? Well, obviously, some of those bears were sprayed more than once. And then you find out that 21 of the cases involved management people spraying bears for harassment purposes. Well, you know, that's kind of different than out hiking along a trail in the wilderness and coming across a bear. So I think that all of the data for these studies should be publicly available so that people can look at it and critique it and decide for themselves whether the analysis is sound or not. Now, I don't believe everybody who reads the article that I write, the articles that I write based on the research that I and others have put together, that our analysis and our conclusions are going to be accepted by everybody that reads it. That's not really important to me. What's important is that they can look at it and they can decide whether what I'm writing makes sense or not. And they have real world data to work with. So that's what we've been doing. We now have 190 incidents. And while the percentage of success rate at the early stages, I think it was as low as 96%, as we've gotten more and more cases, it is pretty much stabilized at around 98%. Now, there are so few failures of handguns to stop bears from attacking, essentially. It'd only take a couple more instances, and you could change that 98% figure to a 97% figure. It might even drop down to 96%. I mean, it's possible.
Sure.
We just don't see it happening. And the thing to remember is we are not excluding data. I think that's extremely important. When you look at one of the articles and you read about the number of times the 22 handgun was used to defend against bears, what we put out is everything we've been able to find where those incidents occurred over the last, well, let's see, it's about 90 years. The earliest one was in 1936. There aren't any more unless you know of one we don't. And if you know of an instance that we don't, we'd love to have you send it to us so we can include it in the database. We always welcome and ask for more information. So we don't include things like, well, my Uncle Joe heard from a trapper that had a friend up in Alaska that there was a bear and X happened. Well, we don't know the date. We don't know the time. We don't know the place. We don't know the person involved. There's no way we can validate any of that. Now, actually, we run into a fair amount of anecdotal cases like that.
Let me get you to hold right there. Last break. Dean has written over 2,400 other articles that are at amaland.com. And, well, I mean, they all still are valid articles to look at and to read and all the other stuff, simply because it has never, all of those things that are in place, they are timeless. We'll be right back. This is Lock and Load.
What if you could cut your heating bills this winter with your existing wood-burning fireplace and not spend thousands doing it? You can with Great Wall of Fire Fireplace Grates. Our U.S.-patented, made-in-America Wall of Fire Grates increase fireplace efficiency, eliminate fireplace smoke problems, and come with a 30-day money-back guarantee. See our grates in action and get free shipping from walloffire.com or call 800-274-7364. Fireplace heat without fireplace smoke. Walloffire.com.
Let me tell you a story about Bill. Bill was a normal guy in his 50s. He had back surgery about 2 years ago. Bill was in a lot of pain. He dealt with his pain by taking the Percocets his doctor prescribed for him. Bill took more and more and more of them to help with the pain, till one day the prescriptions weren't enough to get rid of Bill's pain. Then one day Bill found someone to help him get rid of the pain with illegal drugs he didn't need a prescription for. Fast forward to today. Bill lost his job and his family. The only thing he does have is his drug dealer. If you know Bill's story and you don't want to end up like Bill, call the Detox and Treatment Helpline right now to get away and get treatment.
800-296-1327. 800-296-1327. 800-296-1327. Call right now. Help is standing by. 800-296-1327.
G'day, I'm Jamel that works with Dr. Joel Wallach and the GCN team with Youngevity at teamg'day.com. By becoming an associate, you provide income for you and your family on your own hours while working from home. So contact me, Jamel, by filling in the contact box at teamg'day.com and I will get back to you personally and provide all the support you need to get started and build your Youngevity business. Teamg'day.com. Teamg'day.com.
Radio? Why should I advertise on radio? There's nothing to look at, no pictures.
Listen, you can do things on radio you couldn't possibly do on TV.
That'll be the day.
All right, watch this. Okay, people, and now when I give you the cue, I want the 700-foot mountain of whipped cream to roll into Lake Michigan, which has been drained and filled with hot chocolate. Then the Royal Canadian Air Force will fly overhead towing a 10-ton maraschino cherry, which will be dropped into the whipped cream for the cheering of 25,000 extras. All right, cue them up. Thank you. during that drive. Now, you want to try that on television?
Well...
You see, radio is a very special medium because it stretches the imagination.
Advertising your business with GCN is simple, effective,
and more affordable than you might think.
Visit advertise.gcnlive.com for more info. Take your business to the next level.
It's happening daily. We're being conned by the institutions we used to trust. The mainstream media is distracting us with meaningless headlines instead of focusing on the harsh realities facing American families. Time is short before something big happens, and that's why so many folks are preparing. They're becoming self-reliant by investing in emergency food storage from My Patriot Supply. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com and secure 4-week emergency food kits for each member of your family. Each kit contains tasty breakfasts, lunches, and dinners, averaging over 2,000 calories per day. Save $50 on each 4-week food kit you purchase. Plus, get free shipping on Ready Hour 4-week emergency food kits. You're not ready if it's not Ready Hour foods. At My Patriot Supply, you can also get solar power generators, water filtration units, heirloom seeds, and survival gear. Order by 3 p.m. and your unmarked boxes ship the same day. Shop MyPatriotSupply.com today. MyPatriotSupply.com.
Last time on the firing line, on the investusa.org microphone, this is Lock and Load, talking to Dean Weingarten. We've been talking about the bars and the guns and the bars and all the other stuff, so let's wind this up, sir, because it never gets old.
Very good. So I've been saying that we have 190 incidents that we've documented now, and we've been rigorously searching for those incidents, not just myself, but many people searching for the incidents over several years, and we've been able to document 190. I am convinced there are many more instances out there that we haven't uncovered, but it's because in the past, these were not recorded very much. I mean, if a trapper shot a black bear that was acting aggressively, skinned it and threw the hide in with the rest of his furs. He might have mentioned it to a neighbor or maybe even a fur trader at some time or another, but it probably never was published in any paper or anything.
Right.
There just wasn't much to it, and even if he put it down in a diary, that diary at best might have been thrown in an attic after he died by relatives. So they're just, it's hard to get these incidents the further back you go. Now, we find a few. But as you get closer and closer to the modern age, we get more and more of them. And that's not unexpected. We've got much better communication. I mean, we've got radio. We've got television. We now have computers and the Internet. And you can see that the number of incidents grows, it appears almost exponentially, as you get closer to the present. Part of that is we have much more effective handguns and more effective ammunition. The holsters are better. People are more prosperous. They can afford to buy better gear. And there's more people and there's more bears. So when you have more bears, more people, and more handguns out there because they're easier to get, you're going to get more instances of people protecting against bears with handguns.
Right.
And what we found is they mostly work quite well. Now, yesterday, I think we mentioned in another article that there's been some research about how effective impact projectiles are in dissuading bears. Now, this is strictly black bears. And it appears to me that black bears are a little bit easier to drive off than grizzly bears. Now, it's not, I don't think it's absolutely a huge difference, but it is, I think it's there. But they're also a little bit more resistant to bear spray. But in that research, what they found is when people use slingshots with, you know, some kind of slingshot pellet, probably a marble or a lead pellet or something like that.
Right.
Or use rubber slugs from a shotgun. Again, they're meant to hurt, not to penetrate and kill a bear. That they were both more effective in driving bears off than bear spray was. So just about any handgun using a modern caliber, I mean from 22 long rifle up, is going to hurt more when it hits a bear than a slingshot pellet or a rubber slug from a shotgun. So if the rubber slug and slingshot pellet were effective in stopping the bad behavior, well, I think, you know, a 22 rimfire or 44 magnum are going to be effective as well.
Right.
And it just, it's what I see when people criticize the numbers that we have. What they say is, well, they're only collecting the numbers that involve the, you know, the firearms. So they're not getting all those people that are killed out in the woods, and then nobody ever recorded them. Well, that just doesn't happen anymore. I mean, it's possible. In 1930, it was possible that some remote trapper might be killed by a bear and maybe eaten or dragged off or whatever, and nobody ever recorded it. But by 1960, that just almost never happened. You know, in remote areas, people know where other people are. And they have neighbors, and they usually have friends, and if somebody just doesn't show up, they'll usually go looking for them. And they will usually find what happened if that person died. And if a handgun was used, the bears don't collect handguns. So it's going to be around. And we just don't see that. It's just not happening. So I believe that all the cases that we have are most of the cases that have been recorded and are easily available. As I said, I think there's probably a great many other cases that were successful in stopping the attack, dissuading the bear, but they're just not recorded because it was not a very big event. You know, a black bear or a grizzly bear is acting aggressive, and it gets closer instead of just running off, and somebody fires a warning shot at its feet, and it turns around and goes away. Most people don't record that. It's not required anywhere. The bear wasn't harmed. The person wasn't harmed. Where's the news value? There isn't any. I suspect there are hundreds and hundreds of those cases that are out there that we just don't know about because they're not newsworthy. And occasionally, we will find out about one of them. And some of the cases that are in the news show the value of warning shots. But in general, looking for news accounts of bears and defense against bears with handguns means you're mostly looking at cases where either there was a failure because somebody was injured, or, you know, it was more prominent because bears are now protected like grizzly bears in the lower 48, or because it was a failure. I mean, somebody was hurt. So you're much, the whole selection bias that exists is to bias the data collection away from the successes where bears were stopped from attacking with handguns. And it's probably that way too for long guns.
Yeah.
But since we were interested in handguns because it was claimed made that handguns were not effective, so that's what we started collecting data on, was handguns. And there are reasons to believe handguns would be more effective, mostly that they're just there when you need them. Whereas a long gun, you might leave it leaning up against the cabin, or you can't bring it into play because the bear is so close, or the bear knocks the muzzle aside, or there are a surprisingly large number of people. It seems to be a British tradition more than anything else, who go around hunting in bear country with an empty chamber in their long gun. To me, it seems silly, but a lot of guys seem to like the idea that their client has an empty chamber. safety in their long gun. And you can kind of understand that. They may be dealing with people who don't have much experience with firearms. And that person may be behind them a lot. And they don't want them to have a loaded chamber in rifle behind them that might go off accidentally because the person is not familiar with guns. But for most people, most of the time, it's perfectly reasonable to have a loaded chamber when you're out hunting, especially where there's the potential of dangerous game being around. And so I would urge people to have a loaded chamber when they're in bear country. Just know your firearm, keep the safety on, practice good muzzle discipline, and be aware of your surroundings.
Let me get you to hold it right there. We're running out of time, and I want to take this moment to publicly thank you, because over the entire course of this tenure here at Genesis Communications, Dean has been a very good collaborator. We have done things when he was in Australia. We've done things in Vegas. I mean, he and I have covered a lot of ground over the course of time. We will continue to do so, but it, you know, over with here. This is so thank you very much for all of this good stuff.
You're welcome, Bill, and I hope to continue collaboration in future successful endeavors.
Oh, you bet, because everything continues on now as a podcast, so Lock and Load goes nowhere. But keep this in mind, my parting gift. It has never been about gun control, not once, not ever. It has been always going to be about total control. This has been Lock and Load.
No such thing as a fair fight, and we bring the unfair advantage that is the 2011 platform.
Dominate.
At Staccato, we know the most important gun you own is the one that you're carrying when you're facing that threat to life and freedom.
Win.
We want you to enter that objective confident that you are carrying the best gun in a gunfight. No compromise. No sacrifice. Staccato2011.com. Stand ready to face down the darkness with 2011.
At MGS, we have what it takes to reinvent yourself. With a curriculum designed to balance work, family, and a gun repair education, MGS provides the gateway into one of the fastest-growing segments of the gun industry. Modern Gun School's mission is to provide high-quality distance education using time-tested materials and hands-on projects designed to develop a proficiency in both the technique and the business of gunsmithing. Go to mgs.edu. MGS Trade School. Your future is waiting.
Get healthy, not high, with 100% pure CBD powerful natural pain relief from Veterans Vitality. GCN listeners, have you ever thought about how CBD may help you? I'm sure you have heard about the many benefits of CBD. Well, here's your opportunity to try before you buy. Created by veterans and for everyone who deserves better choices, our CBD is derived from organic hemp, grown in the USA, and third-party tested. Veterans Vitality CBD saves you as much as 25 to 50% over our competition, and a portion of all sales is contributed to veteran nonprofits and events. Many of our customers have experienced improved quality of life, help with anxiety, PTSD, and overall well-being. Our products do not contain THC. They are safe, non-addictive, effective, and 100% legal. GCN listeners, get your free trial bottle of premium CBD by simply paying shipping and handling at GCNFreeCBD.com. That's GCNFreeCBD.com. Again, GCNFreeCBD.com. Offered by Veterans Vitality Premium CBD.